Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we speak with Lewis Castle, the Chief Strategy Officer for Shufflemaster Gaming, on his role with the company and how the table game giant is reaching out into other areas of the gaming business.
Caught up in the race again.
Shufflemaster Gaming has undergone a big change in the past several years, starting with the leadership of the late Tim Parrott and now continuing under Gavin Isaacs. The company is one of the largest table game providers in the gaming industry. Lewis Castle joined the company as Chief Strategy Officer in late 2011, but he was on the board for 6 years prior to that appointment, so he has an intimate knowledge of the company. He has also experience with several internet technology companies, including Zynga, the leading social network poker game on the internet. Castle plans to transition Shufflemaster as an intellectual property provider, but for now he's concentrating on the company's strength, shufflers, and the proprietary table games. He spoke with me at the Shufflemaster headquarters in Las Vegas in June. Lou Castle, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. We met last month in Phoenix at the IMGL conference, and I'm glad we could get together to sit down and talk about your background and what you plan to do for the company. So let's start with that. Let's start with your background and where you came from, because it's kind of an unusual path you've taken to the gaming industry.
Sure. Well, I was born in Las Vegas. Okay, that's a little too far. But I was. Born and
really?
Raised.
Okay.
Native
so you're
in Las
Vegas.
Vegas. Yeah, I am. And spent all my life here. I've always lived here. So although I'll talk about a couple different things, I've never actually left the city as a resident.
Okay, great.
So I started a company called Westwood Studios, which is an entertainment software company, not a gambling company, but the other kind of gaming.
Sure, right.
In 1985.
Okay.
And grew that company with my business partner, Brett Sperry, from just the two people in our garage, mm-hmm. literally, all the way up to a very large powerhouse, actually about 250 people. With offices or sales in 70 countries and mm-hmm. offices in 2 states.
Great.
So quite successful studio. We grew through acquisition or being acquired, I guess. Mm-hmm. We were bought by Virgin in 92, and then Virgin was bought by Viacom in 95, and then Electronic Arts bought us out from underneath Virgin mm-hmm. in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued to work for Electronic Arts for many years after that.
Okay.
A few years running our studio here in Las Vegas until 2003, and then we consolidated into Los Angeles, and I was the chief creative officer for the Los Angeles studio
mm-hmm.
from 2003 to 2009.
Okay.
During that time, around 2005, I joined the board of directors for Shufflemaster because Shufflemaster was getting into technologies for ETS,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of got me involved in the company and got to know a little bit more about the gambling industry as the gaming industry, the other gaming industry.
Right.
In 2009, I left Electronic Arts, having worked with Steven Spielberg, to work for Barry Diller to run a entertainment software company for IAC.
Mm-hmm.
So IAC, for those of your readers who don't know, is behind many of the global online brands that you hear, like Match and
mm-hmm.
Match and Service Magic
sure.
and Vimeo and Expedia and a bunch of other things.
Sure.
So learned a lot about web-based technologies and started to build another studio here in Las Vegas. The change of ownership, as well as just a lack of appetite for the business we were pursuing, led them to close the operations, and that group became an independent group of developers, which mm-hmm. was eventually hired by Shufflemaster to build the Shufflemaster platform. Obviously, I had a lot to do with those events,
yes.
but mostly from behind the scenes.
Right.
And during the time where that happened, I went to work for Zynga, and I was the vice president of studios for Zynga, and learned an awful lot about how social games work
mm-hmm.
and how to make money in free-to-play.
Okay.
And so literally it came down to a phone call. Gavin gave me a call, and I was flying out to San Francisco every week and spending the entire week out there. My family still lived here. My kids were in high school.
Okay.
It was my last year of high school. Gavin gave me a call and said, who am I going to get to run this thing that you've convinced me we should build? As a board member, I actually was the person, was one of the people on the search committee that hired Gavin. So weirdly, I hired the guy, and I obviously think very highly of him if I would then resign from the board and become his employee.
Right.
So I said, there's lots of people, but honestly, I'm kind of interested in, and we had a couple of brief conversations, and I decided to leave Zynga and stay in Las Vegas.
Okay.
I didn't move to Las Vegas.
I stayed here.
And become the chief strategy officer to unify all of the five business segments that Shuffle Master works in on a technology basis.
Okay.
And, of course, to put in place the right kind of structure for our online offerings.
Okay. So you're,
sorry for the long history.
No, that's fine.
That
actually cleared a lot of things up for me, and it kind of got rid of a couple of my questions here. So, but tell me about the role. There's all these different divisions that Shuffle Master has.
Yes.
And your role is to oversee all of them.
In terms of
where you're going with them.
I have an incredibly easy job for almost all of my job, which is the R&D side of things. Nathan Wads reports to me for R&D, but honestly.
Okay.
Nathan is such a superstar. I just have an oversight job really there.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Where I contribute on the R&D side is I've spent a lot of time in software development, and especially in different kinds of tools development. So just trying to help get us all on the same technology basis from a software point of view. And Nathan's been running the same kind of idea on a hardware side. So just getting better efficiencies inside the company, bring our costs down for delivering our content.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, you know, we're in the business of creating intellectual property.
Okay.
So it's really important when Roger creates a table game that we can take that property and quickly move it onto lots of different platforms, ETS platforms, EGMs if it's appropriate, and of course online.
Mm-hmm.
And so by unifying our software architecture and unifying our focus on development, we get to open up some of those possibilities. And so when our folks down in Australia make a new slot machine, we should be able to very quickly bring it online and be able to push it to more platforms.
Okay. All right. Great. So you've been here for about 6 months now. And you know, I hadn't realized you were on the board before you told me that. So you are pretty familiar with the company.
Yeah, I was on the board for 6.5 years, and in that capacity, I was on most of the committees. It's a small board, so I was on most of the committees and involved pretty heavily in the company. We've went through, both by design and through some tragedy, we've gone through a lot of CEOs.
Right.
We lost one to cancer, which was very sad.
Sure.
And so the board had a much more active role. So I would say I had a lot of visibility into the company that you normally wouldn't have as a board member.
Okay.
And I was also the audit chair for a brief period of time as well. So that gives you a lot of visibility into the company doing risk management.
And then you understand the finances and things behind
certainly.
Of course.
Yeah,
you know,
I talked about my business. My background is in fine arts and computer science. That's where I started. When we started growing our company, I became the finance officer. So fine arts, computer science, and finance end up being a pretty interesting trilogy of talents.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about the online side. I think this is kind of the newest thrust that Shuffle Master has had.
It is.
You know, you're known as a company that makes shufflers and retail specialty games and develops specialty games, but you know, the company does much more than that. So talk about some of the other options and the other things that the company does.
Sure. So let's talk about what makes almost all of the money for the company, which is not the online space.
Okay. Right.
Yes.
Of course.
I hope to change that.
Right.
First and foremost, we're an intellectual property company, so we create table games.
Right.
This is a very difficult niche because, first of all, there's a lot of different patents, especially in the United States, and copyrights and trademarks.
Sure.
And player adoption really comes down to the familiarity with brands and the familiarity with concepts.
Right.
So that being said, it's also there's a very narrow window, if you will, in design where you can improve upon the amount of money a casino can make on a table game over what somebody would make playing blackjack or a non-proprietary table game. So really, these games only live in the world, and there's about 30 of them that we have out there right now, if they are better games. They empirically are better games.
Sure.
It's very hard to do. Now, we haven't built all of these games ourselves. Roger, we call him the wizard because he's a brilliant game designer. But even somebody with Roger's caliber couldn't design everything.
Sure.
It's not possible. So a lot of them we acquire. These types of products take a long time to develop. Oftentimes, they end up in field trials and spend years developing before finally they catch on.
Sure.
So part of the way we've built our proprietary table games, and it all starts from there, so I'm spending a lot of time on this one.
Yes.
It's important. Part of the way we've built that library of games and patents and such is we've actually acquired a lot of smaller companies that had just gotten something rolling and were looking at 10 or 15 years before they could get worldwide distribution, getting licensed everywhere and across.
Right.
And we were able to acquire them, give them a lot more financial benefit, and they get to spend the next 15 years lying on a beach in Tahiti, hopefully. And probably obsessing over a new game, probably.
Right.
But I always like to think that they're on a beach in Tahiti, you know. So anyways, then we take that property and push it out. So we've actually done quite well through mergers and acquisitions and building up that business. And that includes proprietary side bets as well as progressives and things like that. So that business actually gave rise, or so the start of the company actually started with a shuffler, which enabled the first and actually required the first game, Let It Ride. So I started a little bit off, but now the way the company works is not really built around starting with the shuffler, it's starting with the content. And of course, the utility software, kind of the utility products work hand in hand with that. So our chippers and shufflers, shoes, all of these different types of utilities, and we're constantly innovating in this space. Those products then enhance the game experience. They either enhance security, which is one thing that casinos are looking for. But surprisingly, fraud is not a huge problem at casinos. You'd think it would be, but fraud is not terribly... when they get stung hard. But it's not a big mathematical problem. What these game, what these products really do is they increase the speed of gameplay. And because you can play more hands, it just simply makes more money for the house. So... and it's actually more fun for the customers, too. I mean, at the end of the day, who wants to sit there and wait around all the time?
As long as you're not a card counter, though.
well, card counter, I mean, there's, I say customers in the sense of we're thinking recreational gamblers.
Recreational gamblers.
Almost all of our products are focused on recreational gamblers, not core gamblers. So that then led, of course, to taking these products as well as proprietary side bets with non-proprietary table games and bringing them to TableMaster, which is an ETS, Electronic Table Systems. We're still the largest in the world when it comes to electronic table systems. I mean, there's younger companies that are out there making some inroads against us because we have sadly not invested what we should have in the past in R&D, but we're planning on coming back with some really strong offerings and, and retaking the emotional crown as well as the sort of mathematical crown. So very invested in that space. And the nice thing about our ETS business is it's a nice augmentation to our proprietary table games because we can offer things besides just your standard blackjack and such. And those games work really well. They're licensed all over the world, and they work especially well in places where you can't have a real live table.
No question.
Of course, we also joined forces, acquired, but it was like 100-pound fish eating 110-pound fish with Star Games. So a great deal of our success, especially in the recent years, has to do with the great and talented people down in Australia. Star Games does Rapid products, which are wonderful ETS products and have been successful all over the world and still are recognized throughout Australia, Asia, and many places as just simply being the best in class. And we continue to invest in that business as well. Adrian, those guys are fantastic. And they, of course, do EGMs, which is the last sort of segment prior to online, which is all the slot machines. And I think it's 25%, but you could double fact check that, 25% ship share in the Australian market. So winner after winner in that space, doing very, very well. And you can see it in our earnings and our growth. We just had a record quarter. I mean, it was amazing. Even with investment that we've done and looking at acquiring online things, we're still posting record results, which is pretty incredible when you think about the amount of money we're investing in R&D, the amount we're investing into the future.
Let's talk about the online side.
I
don't want you to speak for another company, but you know, I'm a little confused about how the MGM deal and the MGM and Boyd deal work then under the bwin umbrella. They just fold them into the Party Poker platform?
Well, bwin Party, I would argue 888. I know 888 is out there. I don't like to disparage competitors because, there's no reason to. You either beat them in the market or you don't, You know, so... bwin Party, 888, and other people that offer B2C offerings are out there signing B2B deals with operators because, frankly, they can't access the market without it. It's not entirely clear which will be able to market access markets even with it because it depends on how they've been played out
of course,
in international markets and what regulators think.
And
some markets are going to be looser than others, you know. The difference in how stringent or how restrictive a gaming regulation or gaming legislation is varies by territory. So how does this work for MGM? Well, I mean, MGM Boyd looked at, we know that poker in Nevada is going to be a relatively small market. We'd like a really big player that would invest a lot to be in the U.S. We look at bwin Party. We know they'll spend a lot of money. And I think that's kind of how the deal gets done. I'm sure it has lots of caveats about being able to be licensed and all those other things. And I can't speak for those guys, but it certainly makes sense to me. You know, just like Caesars getting involved with 888 and Dragonfish and all that makes a lot of sense. They got World Series of Poker. Of course they would do that. I would hope that at some point we can offer a competitive enough offering to where we could entice those types of operators. Mm-hmm. But clearly those two have made their sort of choices. Right. Mm-hmm. There's lots of other really big operators in the world, so we're not by any means short of opportunities.
Right,
so.
Right. All right, let's move to the issue of social gambling games,
okay.
like we see on Facebook. And this is another area where I'm totally confused, so maybe you can help clear it up for me.
It's clear as mud. I'll help you get to it.
It's always been very popular. Last G2E, I sat down with the Double Down guys, who were eventually acquired by IGT.
Hey,
so
good for them, too.
And they had a great deal. So
yeah.
I wish I had
a good deal and a good deal more. I mean, they can only get rich or even filthy rich.
Right.
I mean, good for them.
I kept asking them. I said, why do players come to your site and why do they play? And because there's no payoff, you know, you don't even get prizes in many, many cases. So.
Well, there's a good reason for that, though.
Okay, well,
let's start with what is gambling, mm-hmm. right? So fundamentally, gambling, and this is really broad, so mm-hmm. But I can feel Katie kicking me as she's our general counsel. But fundamentally, gambling is some form of consideration, some matter of risk, mm-hmm. and then a prize or reward.
Right.
The premise that social media companies, what they call them social media, but they're really not social media, they're really social play, social
right.
games. Mm-hmm. Social games, whether they're played on mobile devices that connect through mobile networks, mm-hmm. or whether they're played on Facebook or Google Plus or whatever, those games having been at Zynga, they're based on the principle that we're going to offer you something that's entertaining for free.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point in that entertainment experience, you're going to want more.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have some choices as to how you get that more. Some of those choices might be that you would just spend a lot more time and energy.
Right.
Other choices that might get you more is to tell everybody else about how much you like the product, which, mm-hmm. of course, makes more people play.
Right.
And finally, one of the choices, always inevitably, is to pay a little bit of money not to bother with the other two.
Right.
And so what happens is people are playing a game, they're enjoying it, and they know they could spend another 5 or 6 hours to get this, do that, or that.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the case of poker, they've played, they've run out of their stakes. They know they can wait a little while and they'll get a refresh of their stakes, but they want to keep playing right now. So mm-hmm. just as a convenience,
right.
they want to pay. So money goes into the system, consideration. There's some amount of chance. And then the prize is a very soft prize. It's status. It's bragging rights. It's being at the top of a leaderboard. It's what my world looks like. It's all these Invest Express or rich experiences. So it's entertainment.
Right.
So the real value is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, nobody's ever considered that value to be a suitable prize to consider that gambling.
Right.
It's not clear to me that they never would, but
right.
they don't
mm-hmm.
yet. And probably might not, right? So that company and all those businesses are running that model. And that works pretty well, actually,
mm-hmm.
and that's why people pay. So how does it that Zynga makes millions of dollars on a free poker game?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have 7 million people who play it every day.
Yeah.
And those 7 million people, one person doesn't pay very much at all. If you aggregate and average all together, it's literally pennies.
Right.
And so it's not a lot, but 7 million pennies a day is a lot of pennies.
Right.
Right? Even especially when
sure.
it's multiple pennies.
Right.
And so you get into the idea of how these companies make money is by these little small things, and that's how Double Down makes
mm-hmm.
it. What's not clear to me in that model is that matches to a gambler's
right.
mentality. And I'm kind of getting to game design, which is another part of my
sure.
life.
Right.
What's clear to me from a psychology point of view is that these people that are at the top of leaderboards, that are the most invested, the most engaged, are very much interested in socially sharing or socially competing
mm-hmm.
And socially accomplishing. What's not clear to me is that they're into social risk.
Right.
Or into risk
mm-hmm.
at all.
Yeah.
In fact, not clear. Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Very unclear.
I mean, they like to see their names at the top of the leaderboards.
But are they really into risk? I don't
right.
think they're risking much, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they're risking money, there's probably money they can easily afford. Or
sure.
it's very rare that they're risking something that they would really feel like they've lost
mm-hmm.
something. So there's a company I worked for, IAC, before, and I'm going to do a little plug for iOne.
Mm-hmm.
iOne was a really interesting idea. They basically have a casino site where people play, and they never pay anything,
mm-hmm.
and they get real money prizes.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn cool. And
right.
there's some other people like PurePlay and other poker networks out there that do the same thing. These models work really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And they've taken the opposite approach. They've taken the approach of, well, we're not going to have any consideration on the front. We may or may not have risk, but we're going to have prize,
yeah.
real prize money. So that gets mm-hmm. to your point. Why would somebody do it?
Right.
I think those types of experiences will convert to gamblers a whole lot better
than
the prior ones, but I don't have any proof of that yet. Right. And so part of our business model is to explore some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
I hope that helps. It's clear.
Yeah, no, that clears it up to a certain extent. But, you know, I was looking at the release MGM came out with last week about the new My Vegas game, which Andrew Pascal is putting together for them. And that doesn't seem to be a gambling game. It's kind of a Farmville for Las Vegas or something.
It's fulfilling a certain fantasy, and I would imagine that those people who are playing the Cityvilles, the Ville games, that also enjoy the fantasy world around gambling would be quite interested in that kind of experience. Mm-hmm. And I see no reason why it wouldn't be successful. I mean, I think it's the quality of the graphics and the screenshots I've seen look quite good.
Mm-hmm.
And it really comes down to how much of the expression can I personally put into it and how much can I share.
Right.
And Andrew is a really, really bright guy. And I'm watching with interest, you know, but they have a very good shot.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that kind of game could ever be converted into a casino game, either on a slot machine or on the web, where you might actually gamble on that game?
Well, they've mentioned that they will have, obviously, casino-like games. Mm-hmm. That's part of the fantasy.
Right.
If your fantasy is to be a gambler that becomes a mogul that owns casinos, obviously gambling games are going to be part of it, but you're playing with fake money, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've talked about having some sort of prize systems, which I think is a little odd to me, and I'm not sure that you can... I'm not sure how they're monetizing, so I can't speak to that, but if they actually allow you to purchase chips, I'd be surprised if MGM would be comfortable with also giving prizes.
Right.
So we do the opposite. We don't charge for chips. We let people earn prizes. But that being said, I do think that at some point in the future, in some territories, in some place in the world, there will be experiments in social media spaces to allow real money gambling to be spent on, earn real money to build these things. It is very, very different. The mentality is very different. And the technology, most importantly, is extremely different.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to over-explain answers, but I'll try to keep this one brief because it's really critical. The emphasis when you're building a social media entertainment experience is on low-cost delivery, lots of people being served for free, and making a little bit of money, a lot of money on a very few people, so that you make a little bit for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The constraints and the decision process around that, you sacrifice often, I would say almost always, some amount of security in doing that because it's just more efficient not to be as secure.
Right.
It's not because they're bad programmers or not good designers. It's just simply cheaper.
They don't really need it.
And they don't need it.
Right.
So you can have things like fraudulent chips. You can have all sorts of activities that you would never accept in a real casino.
Right.
The emphasis in a real casino for real money is exactly the opposite.
Right.
It's completely on security because any kind of fraud, if online, with the speed that things move, if you have any holes whatsoever in your armor, you're a dead man. They will take everything you've ever had and then some.
Right.
And it's gone. It's gone so fast you'll never be able to stop it. So unlike a real casino, there is no limit to how much money they could take from you very quickly.
Right.
So the security and the emphasis on making sure that environment, no matter how much it costs, the cost is irrelevant. Those are very different models because you're going to make money on each person. And that's why you haven't seen these things really merge yet, because even when you build a great casino offering, like I'm sure MyVegas and Double Down and other ones are, you're really not building those to gaming regulation constraints because it's inefficient to do so.
Right.
And so that's actually one of the things that us and our team have focused on, is actually having one type of deployment system, not to say the same exact technology, but the same deployment to offer the same level of security and yet the scalability at a low cost. And that's a very hard problem to solve.
Right. No question.
And it's actually the problem we chose to solve. I mean, it's the one that when I joined the company, what excited me about it.
I'm a
technology guy. People go, why would you go to a gambling company? It's low tech comparatively. And it's like, no, not the way we're doing it. It's really high tech.
On the table game side of the business, Shuffle Master is pretty much the 800-pound gorilla in this space. Obviously, it's enviable place to be. How are you going to protect that turf, you know, given the example we've seen of a similar company in the slot side that hasn't protected it nearly as well?
Wow, interesting. Well, so first, I think, you know, our table games are intellectual property that by copyright and familiarity for customers. You know, Coca-Cola doesn't necessarily have to be better tasting than RC Cola.
Right.
It just has to be Coca-Cola.
Right.
So we've built up brands that are very powerful brands, and we've been able to extend those brands and manage them very well. The brands are backed by patent and trademark protection almost everywhere in the world.
Right.
And those come and go. We have thousands, literally, of trademarks and patents that we manage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we partially protect it. But honestly, part of the reason that we wanted to get into the space of online, certainly one of the ones I've advocated, is we want to control the quality of the experience. For us, if we make the best version of three-card poker, even though people will absolutely rip us off and we have to go after them legally, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if we're just simply the best option, then people will come to the best option. I do believe that. Right. At the end of the day, quality will trump a patent or a legal case every single day.
Okay.
So it's twofold. I think that you could not ever maintain your position in the market if you just sat back on your laurels and said, we're the 800-pound gorilla, we're going to hold these bananas. And by the way, I want to contest that to some extent. If you look at all table games around the world, proprietary table games are a very small portion. So if you looked at a big pile of bananas, there's a couple little bunches off to the side. We happen to own eight or nine out of the 10 that bunch, but we don't by any means control all the tables in
the
world.
That's for sure.
And that way, we know what we're good at. We're good at making the products, and we want to keep making really good products. So we're going to have the carrot of a really good product, and we're going to have the stick of having some amount of legal protection.
Okay, great. Now, you know, the problem with the table games is though they can get all these non-proprietary table games, and you have to be able to prove that your proprietary games are going to make them more money than the other games.
Right, and actually that's another place where we have a real win for us because of the hundreds of games that start, you know, maybe 10 get to a field trial a year, and maybe one actually makes it.
Right.
And so we already have battle-proven, hardened products.
Sure.
That are really, really strong. So we're not coming into the market with some crazy new idea for a table game that might work. We're coming into a market with a game that only exists because it's better than every other game or most other games.
Yeah, no
question. So that's how we deal with that one.
Yeah.
And online actually gives us a great opportunity to test those concepts earlier in our cycle. So it'll actually help the efficiency of our proprietary table games. And I didn't speak of that earlier, but I do want to express, you know, I'm not a big fan of synergies, generally speaking, especially when you talk of mergers, because generally they don't pan out. But inside an operating business where you've built extra divisions or extra operating businesses around a core concept, you can get great synergies. And so ETSs help bring familiarity with our table games. Our online games will help bring familiarity with our table games. And those, of course, then work better with shufflers. So all of these products work better together and help each other.
Right.
And online is yet another way. Online will boost all of our other businesses. With the exception of maybe EGMs, except that even then, because we'll offer our online slots. So all of our businesses will benefit from that. And I'm not talking about because it's online. The actual bricks and mortar businesses will benefit from what we're doing.
Okay. Well, that leads into my next question, which is you're an international company. You have offices all around the world. You do have this division, the Star Games, in Australia that is very successful. I was in here interviewing your late CEO, Tim Parrott, several years ago, and he was telling me one of his challenges was to incorporate the corporate culture all across these different divisions. Is that something that you're still working on?
Oh, it's a constant work in progress. Mm-hmm. And since we do acquire things quite often, and especially if we close the on-game deal, which I expect to happen, we would certainly need to have yet another. So we're constantly in a form of integration.
Mm-hmm.
But I would actually say that, you know, when Tim came on board as a board member, had sort of unique perspective on this. It's pretty clear the company had been pretty fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I would credit Tim with is beginning the process of integrating and really collaborating.
Right.
I would say now with Gavin, it's more than just getting everybody underneath a single banner. It's actually best-in-class ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You see real material change in the company because ideas from Australia, ideas from Europe and from Asia are all coming into global discussion, and those ideas are being turned into products that are being launched worldwide.
Okay.
So there you're seeing the growth of this company over the last year since Gavin, a little over a year since Gavin joined, has a lot to do with the inspiration that we can be better than the sum of our parts if we can collaborate.
Okay.
And I would say that you've seen a massive collaboration, which really excited me and was again one of the reasons I wanted to join the executive team because I just love the new atmosphere, the new culture.
Yeah, no question about it. One of the things you recently announced is a land purchase in Las Vegas to build a new campus. How does that play into the corporate strategy?
Simply, we're out of room,
and
we were looking at renewing space, adding more buildings around. There's a couple that we looked at that were close by that we could have aggregated.
Right.
And then Lynn and ops teams and everything else, Kim and those folks all got together. And time and time again, the reality is with the real estate in Nevada right now, It's just simply more economical for us to have a new facility. We can get the land, the building, and everything, and it pencils out better than extending the lease under the current terms, and it's not entirely clear that we would be able to do that anyways.
Sure, right.
So the option of staying where we are and just adding a space was actually more expensive and more disruptive than moving.
Right.
So it became the easy decision.
So you can actually build a facility that will streamline your production process and your R&D process, I would imagine, as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about streamline. I think we're fairly efficient what it is, but it certainly gets everybody under one roof. And that helps when it comes to communication internally and everything. And it helps, again, bring that sense of unity.
Sure.
So
I guess it's got to help with...
I think we have about six buildings now, five buildings. It's, it's a number of places.
Yeah. And it's got to help with employee morale, I would imagine, as well.
I would hope so. It is difficult to know the impact of those things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're positive and negative. I think there will be some that will be positive, some that are negative. But we're committed as an executive team to making everybody feel valued. And I think that you know, certainly speaking for Terry, but that comes in as a strong core competency of our group that we want people to feel like they can contribute. And again, going back to those ideas, I mean, I'm literally following up on sales leads and even following business ideas from suggestions at a board meeting or somebody who was at a picnic and an email from, Kansas.
Right.
I mean, so it's really great to see everybody kind of chipping in.
Okay. You know, in addition to Gavin, you have a relatively new chairman in Gary Saunders. Gary,
a few years, yeah.
Gary, has tons of experience in the operations side. What does he bring to the table?
Well, obviously, Gary knows the gaming business and the operations and the company. I mean, Gary was on the board when I joined 7 years ago, so he's been he's been around, I think, 8 or 9 now.
Right. Yep.
So he's certainly not new to the board.
Yep.
And even though he wasn't the chairman, and until recently, the reality is when you have a board with 3 independent directors or 4 independent directors, difference between one chairman role and another chairman role is not tremendously dramatic. The amount of time and energy you have to put into it is certainly a lot.
Right.
And so I have all the respect in the world for the position. But Gary's been a great advocate for the company. And I think, we've spent, as a company, I can speak as a board member, we've spent a good half a decade getting the house in order and getting things prepared for growth. And we finally found in Gavin a leader that's willing to go carry that flag and charge up the hill and say, let's grow. Let's make this company bigger, better, and more spectacular than it has been. Not just, there's always improvements you can make, but let's stop focusing on trying to incrementally improve this and polish that. Let's go out and let's take some big hills.
Well, Lou, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Very interesting to hear what's going on in Shuffle Master, and good luck with it. We'll check back with you and Gavin in the next few years, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of exciting
next few months. Things move fast.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we're gonna be killing it. I promise.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.